Welcome to the ATL Podcast Network.
I'm Anissa.
And I'm Ellen.
And this is Raw. For those of you who are not Rawyers, that's our tribe.
We get real, we get raw.
Yeah, yeah. Our thing is like no filter ever, unless it's Snapchat.
We're one take whores.
Yeah. And I'm wondering about the one take with the podcast. Boy, that'd be really interesting.
I love that. Listen, it's one take always, yeah, baby. One take always.
It is. You always know. You never know what you're going to get, but you can always trust that what you get is going to be real.
That's it. That's it in a nutshell right there. We're done. Drop the mic.
So you get some of your nutrition in line and you start seeing some benefits from that. Walk us through when you started to kind of incorporate the fitness part of your journey, because it can't just be one or the other. It's both.
Right.
And it's tough.
It's both.
Yes.
So I would say a month into my clean eating habits, I decided to join the gym by my house. I walked in. I was scared to death because here I was, you know, very big and out of shape. But I walked in and the lady that helped me was so sweet. We sat down and we talked about different goals. And I said to her, I said, I'm viewing this gym as my hospital. Mm. I am a patient. I am sick and I want to get better and I'm in here. And she put me with a trainer, Julian, who I absolutely adore, and I'll never forget him. And I remember my first meeting with him. I was so scared, and it was the first time I had ever had a trainer, and he took out a step, and he said, hold my hands. We're going to dance. And I love dancing. You know I love dancing. Mm-hmm.
Yes, you are.
So I held his hand, and he had me go up and down a step. He had me do it several times and I was out of breath, you know, panting. Mm. And we finally made it through. And then he put me on other pieces of equipment and I made it through the training session. And then I went back and I started training with him 3 days a week. And then I started dropping weight and I was eating healthy and I was having protein shakes for breakfast and, you know, with my spinach leaves in there and frozen strawberries and Greek
yogurt.
That's me, girl.
That's me.
Together.
Yeah. That's me.
Yeah. So I was living it. And so March came around and I went back to the doctor to get blood work done. And the doctor was so surprised because at that point I had lost 20 pounds.
Mm, it's fantastic.
And he goes, what are you doing? Mm. And I said, well, I fixed my diet. I started exercising. And he goes, your A1C is perfectly normal.
Yes.
Your numbers are within range. Mm-hmm. So he took me off of the metformin.
Yes.
And so, and I've never gone back. I haven't had it since. So I was able to come off of 5 medications. By April, I was off of 5 medications.
That's a whoop.
Including my
yes,
heart medication I had been on for 20 years.
That's fantastic.
Yes, I was on metoprolol for, I have a irregular heartbeat. Sometimes my heart speeds up really, really fast for no reason. I can be sitting here doing nothing and it will just start to go crazy. Or it will start skipping beats or just stop. So that's why I have a monitor in my chest that's implanted and it's been in there for 3 years. But
right.
They've done 2 ablations to try to fix the problem and it has not fixed it. But I was able to come off of that medication and I was able to get my hormones balanced back out, which was really important too. I was on progesterone for that. So I was able to get rid of that. And then I was on Lexapro for depression and anxiety. I had severe panic attacks
mm-hmm.
For many years. And so I was able to come off of the Lexapro, which I had been on for years. And so I was coming off of all of this medication and I felt like a new person.
So
that's just kind of where I started. I started at One Life.
Yes.
So now I want to veer off from that for a second. That's like some heavy history, you know, and it's a history that a lot of women have similar stories. So now let's fast forward, and here you are, you're working at the gym, you're teaching, you know, you were a fabulous swimmer. You're teaching swim lessons as well as doing aqua. Of course, you know, working out on your own as well and taking dance jam and all sorts of other classes. So talking about your authenticity now, after going through all of this, after being so unhealthy, struggling so much.
And the trauma
of it, you know, and so here you are. And Anissa, I don't know if Anissa told you this, but when you were helping us with the Ride for a Reason at the gym, it was the first time that she had seen you in person in a while. And her description of you was, she was glowing. She's so beautiful.
Stunning.
Stunning.
I'm looking at like the whole story that you've just told us over the last, you know, 40 minutes or so. And here are the three things that I've pulled out. So initially, you kind of have that huge trauma that takes you into this horrible place where you feel all of this backslide happens and kind of really, quite frankly, your life falls apart at that point.
Yes.
And, you know, you sit in that place and then you have this moment, you know, through setback after setback where you've put yourself out there and the setbacks happen until you have that moment where you say to yourself, get up, get up. And then you continue to walk your path, to own your truth. And now those doors are opening for you. And I want to think back to your very first part was because the difference that you could make, if you could help somebody. That was worth you taking the step forward. And I just want to say that for me, knowing you, Anna, I hope you keep walking through those doors because you through your courage and your willingness to have enough self-acceptance and self-love to put yourself out there for other people is evident in everything you do. There is absolutely no way that when you are in a relationship, a marriage, or any type of partnership, right, that you have not opened yourself up to that person in wholeheartedness. And when that person inflicts violence on you, whether it's verbal, physical, there's no way for you to not own some of that as your own fault.
Right.
So, and I'm just going to come clean. So I grew up in a household where this took place, and it wasn't all the time, but there were definitely incidences of it. And everyone that's in the house with the abuser, everyone is taking on that shit.
Yes.
And owning it as their own.
And the abuser's very good at making it seem like he's the victim.
Oh, gosh.
I mean, I'm wired to believe that everything's my fault. My therapist says I take on too much responsibility. And, like, I didn't know that that was a bad thing, but it kind of is. You know, I own up to everything, so it makes it easier for everyone to say, oh, yeah, it's you. It's your fault. You did this. And that's not necessarily true. You know, I just know what he's capable of. And I know the battles that I cannot win. And going back to that, you know, like my ex-husband is former military, special military. You know, he was a police officer in both the towns we lived in. He was a federal agent. He still is a federal agent. He uses, mm-hmm. and he uses those titles very well. You know, he was trained very well in psychological warfare, and it didn't dawn on me till a couple years ago that that's exactly what he's been using on me for my entire adult. I mean, we're talking almost 20 years of yeah. marriage mm-hmm. and being together. You know, I was 19 when I met him, and I was 37 when I finally got the divorce, but I'm still having to deal with his bullshit.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just, you know, for me, yeah, it's crazy for that nobody would believe me and everyone believed him. But again, look at what he had behind him. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, they want to believe that he's honorable. You know, it's hard to believe that somebody in any of those positions would be dishonorable or evil in any way.
Or a liar.
Yes, exactly. Or... even though that's what he was trained to do. Mm-hmm. You know, but when I got with PADV, I learned I wasn't alone. You know, there are many women hiding in shelters who are married to police officers. And that's why they're hiding in shelters. You know, mm-hmm. and I fear for them because I feel like that just makes the journey even harder.
You know? Well, I want to talk about that a little bit because one of the things that keeps coming up for me over and over again with having you here is that in that 20 years, so much of your life was a secret.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And you having a voice, like I want to know a little bit about, if you feel like sharing, what cracked you open to allow the voice to come out versus staying in secret? Like, can you think of a pivotal time, or is there anything in particular that you can draw on that kind of brought that out in you?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it was pivotal just to even have the courage to decide I'm leaving.
Yeah, that's what I mean. How did you decide that?
I don't know if you want to know this.
So only if you want to tell
it. It's only
and
if it's you fine. Want to share it with us.
Yeah, no. Only if you want to share it.
That wasn't the part I was worried about. So the last time I was, and I don't know if you can imagine, but I was literally on the floor and I had absolutely given up hope. I was done. He could do whatever. And I didn't think I was going to make it through that day. I couldn't get up off that floor. And I don't know where she came from, but before I knew it, my oldest daughter was standing over me. And she was prepared to take whatever else he was going to give me. And I felt shitty as a person, as a parent. I was like, there's no way I could let her do that. There's no way. And she was already subject to so much since she was born anyway. I thought if she could be this strong, I had to be that strong for her and for the other. I have two girls for both. So that was a pivotal moment. That was that moment where I said, and I call it the no turning back.
Okay.
There's just no turning back.
Okay.
And, you know, she just... And she's always, you know, that's actually the second time I tell the story of her as my hero when she was born. She saved me. I grew up in a very neglected child, you know, and I think that's the reason why I was so drawn to my ex-husband. You know, I just needed someone to love me. Mm-hmm. And he was very good at faking that. And so... when she was born, she actually was the first person to ever just absolutely unconditionally love me. Mm-hmm. And so I always say when she was born, she changed everything for me.
And she is, she's amazeballs. She's beautiful and independent and smart. She's both of the girls are amazing human beings.
People, yeah.
Well, thank
they
you.
They really are.
They are, and they're incredible. So this one is my hero. The other is my healer. Mm-hmm. I always feel it. I'm a firm believer that God puts people into your lives for very, very specific mm-hmm. reasons. And so for the years, I know that those were the reasons why they were given to me. I don't know what I did. You know, I say that all the time. I have no idea what I did right to get them, but I'm really, really lucky to just have them.
Okay, I'm ready.
When's the first time that you kissed a boy?
I was 18.
Really?
I was 18. I was growing up in a very conservative
yes.
household. I'm Asian. I know you probably can hear it from my accent.
We can't even tell. Yeah. Don't worry.
He's my first, I think. My mom let me out. We were working in a Chinese restaurant all through the summer. Whole high school, and she let me out, and this one boy was just kind of like me. And
did he tongue you?
He did. And something happened.
You know I was going to ask.
Something happened at that moment. I did not know what it was later on, and until later on, something happened in my panty. I was so shocked. And it was
you are such a mess.
My body was so ripe and ready when he kissed me.
And because you couldn't, your parents wouldn't let you go out.
I was 18. So when he kissed me, something happened and I got like, later on I realized I creamed my panty.
We just went from kiss.
Okay, so
you know what? Let's go.
Okay, so Ellen, you started with something simple,
and she was so. Yeah,
and we went straight to cream the panties.
Before.
That's two firsts. At
yeah.
One time.
Oh yeah.
Kendra's right. It was two firsts. So I'm gonna because somebody's my right is laughing so hard. She can't even. Come on, Fawn. Now you got to answer. She can't even answer. She's laughing so hard.
Forgot
what was your first kiss?
My first kiss, eighth grade.
Lord.
My dad was also very conservative. Couldn't wear red nail polish. Couldn't have any phone calls. And so there was a guy who I really had a crush on in the eighth grade. And we would do it like in between classes to get a little peck. And I'm like, yeah, this feels good. And like, kind of like Wendy, I don't think I creamed my pants, but there's something that my heart fluttered. Okay. Uh-huh. And it felt like chemistry, if right. that makes sense. So that was my first. I was in the eighth grade, about to be a freshman in high school.
Girl, hey.
Hey.
You want to ask a question?
Oh, my
this
God.
Is like
okay.
staring me down. She's like, please don't ask Jesse. Yeah. Please don't ask Jesse.
No, I went, you're going to wait and ask her something even more wonderful. Thank you so very much for that. How about, okay, so this one is completely different, but actually my husband gave me this first, and I'm going to ask it because I just think it's funny. Like, I want to know the first time you ever farted out loud in front of somebody.
Oh, Lord. I don't think I ever have. Seriously.
Really?
Christina, for sure.
Christina can't even contain herself. No, she can't even.
Yeah. What was the circumstance?
Okay. So I am very open about my sexuality and sexual, and
sure.
I love it to the max. But there's something about pooping and farting in front of my husband that I've been mortified since day one, right? Because I always interpret it as if he can see or smell the damage that I can do, he is going to run and never come back.
Oh my
so
gosh.
So we were at the dating phase, and he prepared this romantic, date at the beach, and we had the blanket, and we had gotten some church's chicken, and we had some beer, and I had it building up, and I was like, oh shit. So what I did is I scooted into the sand, thinking I'm good. And I saw him get up and try to stretch. So as soon as I saw him get up, I did one of these little side moves where I lifted my leg, and literally there was dust that came everywhere. I was like, oh my God. And he just turns and looks at me. He's like, oh, you farted.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
That's like, yeah. And disclaimer, when we started living together, I used to go down to the Jack in a Box down the street to go poop every day. I used to poop as soon as he left the house or before at work. But if I needed to poop while he was home, I'd be like, I gotta go out to the store. I'll be right back. I couldn't do it. Wow. It took me 8 years of being married until I finally was able to do it. And that's only because I was pregnant and I had no choice.
That's a lot of work.
It was too difficult.
Ask one.
okay, so let's ask Jesse.
All right.
Like, I'm ready. I'm nervous, but I'm ready. tell me the first time you got your period and you had, and was mom there? What was going on?
I think I was in seventh grade.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think I really knew what it was, what it was about. And I remember being embarrassed about it. And I think I came out of the bathroom and I tried to get you to like guess what had like happened. I was like, so this thing happened to me, and like I didn't want to say it.
Right.
And then I guess you eventually like figured out what I was trying to tell you, and then I think you walked me through like how to put a tampon in.
Yeah, she was like full on right off the bat. I'm not wearing that pad thing.
It's like a diaper.
You're gonna have to. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, and I can. Yeah, totally. You did.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
I gave her a mirror because she didn't want me in the room to put it in. Yep. So I said, I'll stand right outside the door. Here's a mirror. You can put it right there on the floor. And yep,
it's a good idea.
So yeah, she had a little mirror. And
I don't remember that part. Yep, sounds kind of traumatizing.
A little hand mirror.
So maybe that's why I don't remember that part.
Every girl should honor
her body. You're totally
and your body,
right.
Guess what? Is your I wish they'd have come up with a better name than vagina, though. I really do. Because it's just not very pretty.
Yeah, but you only think that it's not pretty because
of, yeah, true. Yeah.
Well, you could always name it. Yeah. Like, yeah. It has a name. Do
yours
you have a name?
I don't.
I don't either.
Does yours have a name?
No, but now I think Hoo-ha? I need
do you have a name for yours,
yes.
Wendy?
Hoo-ha. My little sister.
Oh. Ooh, yes, Wendy.
I take care of my little sister every day.
Kind of my girl.
So, Kendra, can you remember? Like, you were looking at Fawn, you're like,
I told you I'm going to have issues remembering.
That's okay.
Anything. But, you know, I don't remember. I remember that I somehow had ended up with this kit. I don't know if we got it from school.
I remember those kits.
I had the kit.
It had the big old pad in it. And it
the belt.
Yes. And I'm like, what is that? No, I didn't do that. But I didn't do the tampon because I was scared to death of that thing. Mm-hmm. So all I did was, I remember this package with care package from the doctor maybe or the school. But I do remember that huge pad.
I remember it.
And that,
yeah, I remember that.
That only lasted a few cycles. And I'm, no.
What is the belt?
Oh. Yeah, so back, it was, it's almost like how a garter belt was. You had a belt that went around your waist and you would attach to this big long, the pad that then had these big things that came up. So it was,
it would stay in place.
It would stay in place. So then you didn't have like the sticky adhesive. Right.
You're
going
to have to Google it.
Wow. Yeah. That's old school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And now you can have one of those freaking cups that you set up there and just collect.
I've never done
that.
I'm dying to try one of those. Yeah. Shot glass for your vajayjay.
Yeah.
Basically.
One more awesome story and I'm so done.
No.
Okay, good. Go.
We love the stories.
So I like going overseas. I like knowing that my comedy is universal and that I can entertain, you know what I mean, all kinds of people from all walks of life, you know, a prince all the way to the projects. It doesn't matter. And so, I like performing at award shows. So I perform at shows like the Soul Train Awards, BET Awards, Black Girls Rock. You know, there's quite a few shows I perform comedy. What I do is called warm-ups. I'm a warm-up comedian. Mm-hmm. So before the show starts, I come out and I tell jokes, get everybody comfortable. And as the show is going on and different acts are coming in the middle of it while you all are on commercial and home, I'm on stage.
Okay. I always wondered about that. Yeah. I always wondered about that. Yeah.
Yeah. That's my job. And so I was at Black Girls Rock and on this particular time, and I've met so many wonderful people. I almost shed a tear thinking about all the wonderful people I've met through that. But on this day, Mrs. Obama.
Oh, stop it. Michelle Obama was there.
Yes, yes, yes. Stop. So we all knew she was coming and so forth and so on. And so I'm like, ugh. So when she gets there, I'm on stage when she walks in. So I'm like, oh my gosh. And so I'm like, you know, everybody, it's, you know, it's Mrs. Obama. And everybody rises and we're clapping and we're going. And I'm just like, oh.
We love her. Oh, right.
Yes, of course you do. And so she sits down and I'm, you know, I'm like, all right, now everybody settle down. You know, and I had to start cracking jokes. And I was telling her how I always wanted to marry a president. Mm-hmm. But because of my past, I don't think it'll be the president of the United States. But. You know, as long as he kind of be the president of Meineke, I don't care. I just wanted somebody presidential. President of my block club, I don't care. I just wanted some presidential. So I'm telling these jokes, and I'm going, and then I tell a joke about, because it was a couple of years ago, and it was so much, you know, everybody was into these fake booties, which they still are now, but everybody was just getting them back then, a couple of years ago. So, and I was just saying how, you know, I just don't have the kind of booty that I thought I had, you know what I mean, or whatever, and I don't want to feel pressured. I was saying how much I had I said a very polite booty. It's very polite. It come in, it's quiet, and it minds its own business. Yeah. You might not even know what's in the room. Very quiet booty. I said, but some of y'all have a disrespectful booty. I mean, you knocking over tables with your booty. You breaking up relationships with your booty. You just a rude booty child, right? And so I'm done. And I say, well, look, I got to go. I can't tell a bunch of jokes because I'm going to get cut off. And I leave. Yeah. And so I'm standing in the back. And I get and I ask the head of BET, or I forgot her title at this time. Anyway, it doesn't matter. I asked her, could she please, I don't know why I'm asking, but is there some way that I can get a picture with Mrs. Obama? She was like, honey, Miss Deborah Lee said, I don't even know if I can get to bed. You know what I mean? And she'd been to my house, whatever she was saying, you know. And she said, but, you know, I don't, you know, maybe God's in the business. I done bless in business. And so a moment later, I get a tap on my shoulder.
Stop
from,
it.
From Secret Service. And and they say, excuse me, but Mrs. Obama would like to take a picture with you.
Stop.
At the end. I said, what? And they're like, if you could just stick around, she would love to take a picture with you. Because also, I'm leaving the stage during one of the breaks, and she's coming to the stage. And I'm like, oh, my God, I'm finna walk past her. And so when I walked past her, she stopped me and said, you're brilliant. She said, you're so funny and you're beautiful and you're classy.
And
I got the same compliment from Felicia Rashad.
I love Felicia Rashad.
Claire
I
Huxtable.
Love her.
She was like, the best thing about you is that you do things with class and you don't have to swear. Like, you're just a class act and you're beautiful and you're so very funny. So to get that.
That's what we feel from you is integrity. You're aligned. Your integrity is,
I think that's what it is. I think that's where the glow is. I mean, to be honest,
and
like
you said,
crazy.
Everything feels
harmonious inside. Mm-hmm. Very intense.
It's your integrity.
So you got your picture.
To finish the Michelle Obama story. I forgot. So I'm backstage, and it's Cicely Tyson, all these different people.
I
love Cicely Tyson too. And her handler was so rude though. I should have just took the picture because they were like, you should have just took a child. We're like, anyway, point is, I'm back there because I'm like, we're all somebody. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Like, exactly. Why would I be back in the back room? And so I think it was Tracee Ellis Ross.
And I love her too.
I know, right? So we're all back there. It's going down. And so Mrs. Obama comes in. And I go over and I take the picture with her, and we're smiling, holding each other, and we're both from Chicago, and so I think I made that joke because I was telling her, because she went to a more prestigious school, and mine was in the hood, and so I made a little joke,
but that's okay.
That.
Yeah.
And so we're smiling and laughing, and I'm about to walk away, and she says, "Now wait a minute, you can't leave. You ain't gonna tell me what type of booty I have." Oh my gosh. And I'm glad I'm quick on my feet. I said, respectfully so. I said, I can't comment on that. I said, but do you want to know what the streets say? I tell you what the streets say. She said, what the streets say? I said, oh, the streets is talking. She said, girl, they talking? I said, the streets talking. The streets say it's disrespectful. I just said, what? So we back there laughing. So when you see the picture, that's what we're laughing about. And so my thought is that, and I hope that she went home and told President Obama that she had a disrespectful booty. And just to continue with it, just on cool stuff that happens, her Secret Service was so sweet and gave me a number to contact them. And she actually has tried to come to one of my shows, but it was like we were at Martha's Vineyard at the same time. Uh-huh. But they were on a whole nother side of the island, of course, and the venue it was just too small and they couldn't do it.
Right.
But just to know that I was thought about even after the performance and even when I did, because I don't always call when people say call because of fear or whatever.
Right.
But I actually did call, and to know that, you know, that she meant that. And
I think she totally would come see you. Okay.
Yeah.
I think she totally would want to come see you. That is such a great story. I love her.
That's a great story. And I actually have not told the that whole story to anyone. I was going to actually wait until I was on a late night show. But you know what?
Well, you can still tell it on a late night show.
Oh, I will. But, you know, I just.
I love that.
Yeah,
I got
to give it to the raw ladies.
Menopause is technically one day. It's when you have been free of a bleed, any bleed, for one entire calendar year. So a lot of people go 8 months and they think, all right, menopause, I'm not going to have another period. And then you bleed and then you start counting over again.
That just happened to me. I did six mm-hmm. months without a period and then bled like a motherfucker yeah. for four straight weeks.
Okay. Very normal. Very okay. normal.
Okay.
Nothing wrong with you. Okay. But now you start counting
again.
Again.
So that's what I was going to say. Okay, you start counting again.
So the year starts over now.
Right. So you are perimenopause because things are out of rhythm. And it happened because your ovaries were getting empty of eggs. So as soon as your ovaries get empty of eggs, your body goes, well, no longer fertile. So now it's time to quit making as much estrogen. So your hormones that you're going to see change the most are estrogen, which is actually a group of three, and we're just going to call them estrogen, mm-hmm. progesterone. Mm-hmm. And it's not so much that they change on their own. It's that your ratio of one and the other is out of balance. Okay. Estrogen can drop to about 50% of your original numbers, while progesterone can drop to zero.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. However, it's estrogen that seems to cause the most mm-hmm. havoc in your okay. body. All right. But you're still making some of it. Your adrenals will still make estrogen, even though your ovaries aren't making estrogen. And here's the thing that we'll probably get into later. Your fat cells are actually an endocrine gland.
Mm-hmm.
And your fat cells still make a little bit of estrogen.
I didn't even know that they made estrogen.
They make estrogen. The more fat cells you have, the more estrogen you make, which is why obesity is a risk factor for ovarian and breast cancer, because the longer you're exposed to estrogen over your lifetime, the more likely you are to get a feminine gynecological-related mm-hmm. cancer. Huh. So
I didn't know that either.
Anything... Think about what changes your estrogen levels. People who never have children are going to have higher levels. Me too.
Me too.
Ellen and I are mm-hmm. pointing to ourselves. People who have never had children are going to have higher levels of estrogen because we've never been without that 9 months of not having that estrogen. Mm-hmm. The more fat cells we have, the more estrogen. We now have environmental estrogens, why you should never drink out of a water bottle that sits in a hot car, mm-hmm. or plastics that are heated in the microwave unless they're BPA-free. You have soy, which has mm-hmm. isoflavones, which are plant estrogens, and you'd have to eat a pretty good amount of those unless you were holding on to the BRCA gene. If mm-hmm. the BRCA gene runs in your family, your doctor's probably going to tell you very little plant estrogen at all. Then the other thing that a lot of people are going to hate me for is the amount of alcohol you drink, because there is an enzyme in your liver called aromatase, and everybody has a little bit. But when you drink alcohol, your aromatase levels go up. And aromatase turns testosterone into estrogen.
No kidding.
So... everybody has aromatase. Men have it because they need a little estrogen to keep their blood vessels pliable. Estrogen keeps your blood vessels pliable, which is why you're less likely to have a heart attack before menopause if you're a woman than afterwards. Men that are bodybuilders take aromatase inhibitors because they don't want any more aromatase turning testosterone into estrogen. So the more you drink, aromatase raises in proportion to how much you drink. Drink a little bit, make a little bit more aromatase, mm-hmm. turn a little bit more testosterone into estrogen. Drink a lot, make a lot of aromatase, turn testosterone into estrogen. Think about it. What's the first outward sign or symptom of a male alcoholic?
I mean, Yeah,
his face turns red
skin,
and that's our blush. Yeah. That's our blush that comes from estrogen. Because think about it, we don't have to put on blush when we're fertile and our estrogen levels go up. Mm-hmm. We have those pink cheeks.
Yeah,
when baboons are fertile, their butt turns red because it's the estrogen levels. That's okay. How the male baboon goes to get them. Men get man boobs.
Yeah, they do.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Yeah, because of their level of estrogen. So we want to keep our estrogen levels as low as possible, but it is the change in estrogen that sets apart, that sets us on the track of night sweats, insomnia, cranky moods,
depression.
And so let's
weight gain.
Let's jump ahead because all of those things now play back into the fact that we're not sleeping. So the lack of estrogen, the lack of estrogen dropping to 50% is now going to throw a bunch of things off. So we know that estrogen and melatonin have a relationship where when estrogen levels are higher, melatonin levels are higher.
Mm-hmm.
So you sleep better when your estrogen levels are higher. So once that estrogen starts dropping, melatonin drops. Right. Plus, we know estrogen throws off our internal thermometer. Well, you make more melatonin when you're cold. You always sleep better in a colder room less clothes.
Right. Exactly.
So far we have no sleep because of less melatonin, which is less estrogen. When melatonin levels are high, serotonin is high, and serotonin is what makes you go, ah, everything is good with the world.
Exactly.
Right.
Well, when melatonin levels are low, because estrogen levels are low, then serotonin levels are low, and we turn into a bitch and go through depression. And then we're not sleeping because of all those reasons. And now we have to look at the fact that when you sleep, you make growth hormone. You make growth hormone in non-REM, which is your stage 3 and 4, and you make testosterone in your REM sleep. But if our sleep is thrown off because of all those things we just mentioned, we're not getting the growth hormone and testosterone we may need, so that when we do work out, we're not getting the muscle growth that we should be getting.
So is that also why it seems like since I've been deep in my perimenopausal kind of symptoms and things, that I feel like my muscles are going away. Like they're just evaporating.
I am in the 5 minutes, less than 5 minutes that she's been talking. I mean, holy shit.
Light bulb.
That's you.
Yeah. And not only that, but the doctors that I've talked to about this have never explained it like this. And it makes perfect sense. And I used to love to work out. I was always one of those people. I loved it. I mean, I had my days, but I never disliked it. And I always had energy. You couldn't get me to get up. Like, I just am like,
you were the
deflated.
5:15 queen. Yeah. You were in there every morning.
Every morning.
Yeah.
And I just thought it was because I'm not sleeping. My energy level is low. But now this all makes sense. And if you were here, sitting here, watching Melissa talk about this, I mean, we're in awe. It makes so much sense.
And the thing that sucks is that people don't know this. Like, this should be, can we spend a little less time selling me your bullshit so I can lose weight and maybe talk to me about the truth about what's happening in my physiology so that I can make real choices about what's actually happening, not taking more stuff that's actually making stuff worse or whatever.
You can hear Anissa and Ellen on multiple platforms.
You can visit atlpn.com, atlantapodcastnetwork.com. And on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, SoundCloud, and my fave, Spotify.
And you can search for us on Instagram, ATL Podcast Network, Atlanta Podcast Network, Ellen Nickel,
Anissa Amison, and Anissa Ellen Raw.
Raw.
Yep.